How could you know that the name belonged to me?
Like I told you earlier, you talk too much, demon.
What does that mean?
You told me that you were one of the demons who corrupted Luther on Caliban. That you still speak to him.
And? What of it?
Azrael leaned in closer to the trapped demon.
You forgot that Luther still speaks to me.
The demon's eyes grew wider in shock.
He told me how to recognize you in all your forms. To know all of your names, all of your methods. It was Luther who gave me the very weapon with which to defeat you.
Then be done with it. Speak my name again and send me back into the warp, or drive me through with that weapon of yours.
I don't think so, demon.
Azrael blinked, clicked open a Voxlink.
Gabriel?
Lord Azrael? We thought you dead. What happened?
No time for that now, brother. Do you have a fix on my position?
Affirmative.
Then teleport me out of here.
Azrael turned his attention back to the demon.
You will be vanquished, demon, but not by my hand. I have a mission to complete, but there is another coming who will cause you far more agony and suffering than I could ever hope to inflict upon you.
No. No. Please show mercy. I beg of you!
Ignoring the demon's pleas for clemency, the Dark Angel faded away. Chayna finished typing and tucked the data slate inside her tunic. The work she'd done in the sensorium, the knowledge she had gleaned about the sub-Vox network, was too vital to be lost, so she had noted down her observations and theorems in the hope that if her body was found, her work might find its way back to Mars for further study. She had known for a while that three people, if they were indeed people, had found a way into this section of the ship and were on their way up here, likely to kill her. The last thing she had heard from the Space Marine before he cut off communication was that his mission was to cleanse the ship, not rescue her. So she knew that the three fast-moving dots on the body heat sensors were not friendly forces. As their footfalls drew nearer, and Chayna heard the sound of armored feet stamping along the deck, she was gripped by the true horror of what was soon to burst through the door to the sensorium. Fearing the brutality of her demise, she removed the data slate from her tunic and placed it atop one of the instrument consoles. Her would-be killers reached the door and attempted to batter it down. The thick plastile did its job, impervious even to the strength of traitor Astartes, and they were forced to try and shoot their way in instead. A flash of blue light crept into the sensorium from the minuscule gap at the foot of the door, and the faint tang of scorched ozone hit her nostrils. The weapon's fire from the other side intensified briefly, and then fell silent. The edge of the door began to glow, smoke coming off it in wisps as intensely hot plasma burned through the plastile. Chayna raised the last pistol she had taken from the body of one of the sensorium officers and pointed it at the door. She might be about to die, but she was determined to go down fighting. The plasma beam was making short work of the door, and as the glow of molten metal almost completed its circuit, Chayna gripped the weapon tighter and scrunched her eyes shut. She only had time to let off a single shot before the weapon was snatched from her grasp and tossed aside. Her eyes still closed, she could feel the presence of another standing before her. To her surprise, the expected hand around her throat, blade to the gut or shot to the head, never came.
I am not afraid of you. I am not afraid of you.
Really? Even in my wounded state, I still think I cut quite the imposing figure.
Slowly, Chayna opened her eyes to see a massive green armored figure looming over her. His left arm hung limply at his side, the pauldron over his shoulder torn and dented. A thick crack ran across the plate, covering one of his thighs, dried blood riming the jagged edges like dark rust. His great winged helmet was clamped to his waist, and he regarded her with stern, piercing eyes set into a taut, lined face.
Lord Asriel!
She noticed the scorch mark across the shoulder guard of his right arm, the forest green blemished by an ugly black scar.
Oh, sweet Omnissiah! I just shot a space marine.
Under the circumstances, I can forgive you, Adept.
I don't understand. You said there would be no rescue, that your mission was to cleanse the Revenge.
Asriel gestured over his shoulder. Jaina peered around him to see a trio of motionless corpses lying just beyond the doorway.
Three dead Black Legionnaires counts as cleansing.
The Dark Angel clasped his helmet and pulled it over his head, locking it in position.
Time to go, Adept. I have a battle to get to. And there's an unmanned bridge that needs to be back up and running. The Revenge is not yet under our control, and my battle brothers and I will find its retaking easier if we have eyes and ears on the command deck. Gabriel, this is Asriel. Mission accomplished. All enemy combatants neutralized. Requesting extraction.
As you wish, Lord.
Placing a hand on the Adept's shoulder, the two figures slowly faded from the sensorium. For Jaina, the war was almost over. For Asriel, it was only just beginning.
He tricked us, Khan. Asriel tricked us both. He lured us here in the hope that we would kill each other.
Khan didn't seem to notice or hear the motionless demon. Instead, looking up and around at the vast chamber and the shimmering, constantly changing walls.
It doesn't have to be this way, Khan. Set me free and I'll grant you my aid. Together, we'll bring the Dark Angel to heel and his head will be yours.
Enough of your lies, demon. Where is he?
The World Eater did not look upon the demon as he spoke, still taking in his new surroundings.
Gone. Back to rejoin his chapter and gloat how he bested the most favored of both the Blood God and Changer of Ways.
He did not best me, demon. He cheated me.
Yes, yes. Asriel is a cheat. A liar and a cheat.
He cheated me out of his skull. A skull that I had promised to Khorne.
Khan, finally, let his gaze fall upon the helpless demon.
So, I will have to offer him yours instead.
No. No! Please, I'll give you anything. All you have to do is name your price.
The Ascension of Balthazar, a Space Marine Battles audio drama by CZ Dunn. Performed by Sean Barrett, Tim Bentinck, Jonathan Keeble, Saul Reichlin, and Jane Wymark. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. Though the message was only brief, its cost in human life was expensive. The sender, under great duress, was the first to die. A bolt shell put cleanly through the back of his head the instant his captor had confirmation of its release into the warp. His corpse had not yet begun to cool when, mere minutes later, it reached the first of many relay stations it would pass through on its way to its intended recipient. In unison, the astropathic choir screamed out in terror as the complex array of images and emotions passed through their minds before being diverted onwards. Those who did not die instantly through their exertions turned upon their fellow psychers, clawing at each other in a frenzied orgy of warp-induced psychosis, until not a single one of them was left breathing, their pinpricks of light forever extinguished in the Astronomicon. A pilgrim ship believed the glow emanating from their young, blind astropath was a sign from the Emperor himself, that he had delivered unto them a new saint in recognition of their piety. But when her being turned to pure warp energy and engulfed every living thing on board, all that was delivered were fresh souls to the entities lurking at the edge of reality, and the cursed missive to its next destination. Yet more lives burned out, fueling the message as it traveled halfway across a segmentum. Drinking wells turned to poison. Beasts of burden and livestock became feral in their pens, turning on their keepers. Hitherto unknown diseases ran rife across an untold number of worlds, millions dying in agony before cures and vaccinations could be discovered. A small agricultural world, though it did not suffer the ill effects immediately, became the source of inquisitorial attention and ultimately sanction. For several years after the message passed through a latent psyker in an outlying farming community, those children that were not stillborn were horribly mutated. The few that did make it beyond infanthood were purged, along with the rest of the population. The penultimate victim was the only being of any note to have acted as a conduit for the message. Epistolary Arcan Karnasher of the Executioner's Chapter of the Adeptus Astartes, being in his 183rd year of service to the Emperor, was engaged in personal combat with an Archon of the Cabal of the Sundered Veil. The Dark Eldar had been a threat to trade routes in the Galactic South for centuries, and while the Imperial Navy had done an admirable job of containment in that time, the addition of several Space Marine chapters to the patrols had finally put the Xenos to rout. There, on the bridge of the Archon's flagship, his force axe poised to deliver the killing blow, the message bounced off Epistolary Karnasher's psyche to travel the final few light years to its recipient. Despite his shields and defensive training being great, the psychic momentum unbalanced the librarian. Sensing an opportunity, the Archon ran his blade through the executioner's torso, dropping the bulky figure to his knees. As the Dark Eldar hefted his blade, ready to strike down and decapitate Karnasher, the psychic communication had already reached its destination and was poised to claim its final life. Julina Fourneau was in the process of deciphering her previous message when the new one hit with astonishing force. It physically lifted her from her feet and slammed her against the bulkhead of the chamber. The chapter serfs charged with guarding the astropathic choir could only watch on helplessly as she burned with an incandescent green flame. Her screams echoed through the corridors of the Pride of Caliban, and only ceased when one of the serfs was able to recover from his shock sufficiently to roll her to the ground and douse the unnatural flame. Her breathing, ragged and sharp, she glared at the serf with long dead eyes.
I need Lord Sardacchio right now.
She will only deliver the message directly to me?
That is correct, my lord. She claims the contents are for you and you only.
The giant figure of Company Master Zadakiel towered over Captain Selina's, her slight, wiry frame making her look like a child in comparison. He looked to the five other figures in the war room, each clad in the bone-white Terminator armor of the Deathwing, and then back at the woman bowing before him.
Very well, Captain Selina's. The Deathwing and I will grant her audience here in the war room.
She bowed lower before taking her leave, her almond-shaped eyes never making contact with any of the Space Marines. If such interspecial breeding were possible, Zadakiel would have sworn the woman was half Eldar. Such was the alienness of her features. Once she was out of the room, he turned to his battle brothers.
What do you make of that?
A poor omen. The ship is abuzz with talk of what happened to the woman. They say she burned green, and with such a heat that it melted the bulkhead of the astropathic choir's chamber. Throw her out of an airlock and be done with it, I say.
Dardariel was usually the most taciturn of Squad Balthazar, but his distaste for matters of the warp often made him the most vocal of the five, a hangover from the superstitions of his primitive tribal homeworld. Since the destruction of Caliban at the tail end of the Horus Heresy, the Dark Angels had become a nomadic chapter, traversing the galaxy in their asteroid-bound fortress, the Rock, and their fleet of battle barges and strike cruisers. Rather than recruiting fresh battle brothers from a single world, the Dark Angels now drew upon all of the planets of the Imperium for the potential inheritors of their gene seed.
Stay your tongue, Dardariel.
Sergeant of the Deathwing Squad, and second only in years of service to Zardakiel, Balthazar had learned a measure of pragmatism during his time as part of his chapter's inner circle. While he was still a scout, he had honed his dislike and distrust of Psykers, which, like Dardariel, was due to the attitudes and bearing of his homeworld. Even when he became a full-fledged battle brother and took his place in Fifth Company, fighting alongside the chapter's librarians did little to temper his ill feelings. At that time, he would have quite happily held the airlock open while Dardariel jettisoned the helpless astropath.
I have no more fondness for the Psyker than you, but the nature of the message's arrival means somebody was trying to get our attention.
Then I would say they've got it, wouldn't you?
Zardakiel motioned to the robed newcomer entering the room, somewhat redundant as the stench of seared flesh had already heralded her arrival. Though her garb obscured the worst of them, her blackened face bore all the evidence of how grievous her injuries were. In places, the flesh and muscle had burned away to bone, and strips of skin hung from her cheeks, resting on blisters and open sores. Two chapter serfs assisted her to the center of the circle, formed by the armored figures. Captain Salinas walked behind her. When she spoke, it was with the voice and deportment of a dying woman.
Three messages have I for you, my lord, though a fourth was received, but intended solely for me.
Zardakiel dismissed the captain and the two serfs. Once they had gone, he bid the astropath continue.
The first was the simplest to decipher, and its meaning is clear. A world is dead.
Dardariel scoffed, but the other members of his squad castigated him silently.
The message was not more specific?
No, my lord. Sometimes parts are lost in transit or their meanings altered and confused. But I believe this message only traveled a relatively short distance, and its integrity is sound.
Despite her milky white eyes being useless, they were transfixed on the company master.
That in itself is something. Perhaps the world in question is close by.
Zardakiel nodded.
And the second?
Considerably more difficult, Lord, as it was a mixture of metaphoric imagery, complex emotion and currents that already flowed within the warp. I believe my interpretation to be accurate, but there are gaps in my knowledge that may have allowed misunderstanding to creep in.
She paused, taking a moment for her scorched lungs to gather breath.
The Black Angel. He descends, no, falls, from the sky on broken wings. The metal from which he is made, as cold as his soul. Though he is no beast, he is still uncaged or untamed.
All five Deathwing tensed. Narkariel, standing directly behind the astropath, was about to strike her down when Zardakiel gestured for him to halt.
This is very important. Was there anything else? Any imagery that you discounted or could not decipher?
None, my lord. Though there was a faint reverberation that I couldn't quite distinguish. A clanging sound like metal on metal. An anvil being struck Possibly a bell.
There are several forge worlds in the neighboring sectors. What if this was a distress call sent by one under attack?
The buzz in the Deathwing Terminator's voice was common to all natives of Mendrion's world. Zadakiel looked thoughtful for a moment.
Possible. But why would the message be meant directly for me?
None of the Deathwing could offer an answer.
Your final message needed neither divination nor study. It was quite blunt.
The astropath pulled her robe from her shoulders, allowing the garment to drop to the cold metal floor of the war room. She turned her burnt body around so that her back was facing the company master. There, among the crisp, charred flesh that clung to her back, were several patches of entirely unburned skin, the black punctuated by patterns of pale pink to form High Gothic numerals.
Throne? What is that?
Barashiel was a seasoned campaigner and had served the Dark Angels during his time in both 7th and 5th companies, as well as his half-century in the Deathwing. He had never witnessed anything like this.
Their coordinates. Somebody is attempting to lead us somewhere.
The hulking green figure moved nearer the husk of the astropath. He picked her robe from the floor and returned it.
Thank you. You have done a great service to the chapter, astropath. And for that, you have our gratitude.
I live only to serve, Lord.
But please, tell me this. What was the fourth message? The one intended solely for you?
I...
Please, you've just told me you live to serve. Serve me now, by telling me.
For the first time since she entered the chamber, the fear Julina felt became evident on her face and in the language of her ruined body.
Its meaning was entirely clear. Clearer even than these marks on my back. It told me that now that you think I know your secret, you won't allow me to live.
Zadakiel placed his gauntleted hand on the back of Julina's neck. She winced as the cold ceramite touched her burned flesh.
Some secrets are just too big.
Zadakiel snapped the astropath's neck like a twig, her lifeless form collapsing to the deck with a morbid grace. None of the ivory terminators did so much as flinch at her cold-blooded murder.
Captain Salinas.
The company master called to the captain, who had been waiting a respectful distance from the entrance to the war room. Several seconds later, the lithe woman entered and bowed.
Yes, my lord.
Fifth company are to transfer to the Salvation. Master Boas will lead both fourth and fifth companies to rendezvous with the executioners and doom eagles to fulfill our obligation to patrol the Draconis system trade routes. Squad Balthazar and I will need the Pride of Caliban warp ready as soon as they've transferred, and new coordinates will be issued.
Understood, Lord.
That is all. Dismissed.
The captain turned to make her exit, but halted upon noticing Jelena's body. She turned back to Zadakiel, this time making eye contact with him.
A great mercy, my lord. The girl would not have survived much longer anyway.
Before continuing on her way to carry out the company master's orders. Once she was beyond the threshold of the chamber, Zadakiel addressed the Deathwing squad.
It would seem fate has intervened and presented us with a new mission, brothers. Once again, we have the honor of meting out retribution on those who betrayed us so long ago.
This is a mistake.
The Thunderhawk gunship sped towards the ground, its six passengers checking and double-checking their equipment in readiness for whatever awaited them below. Mendrion spoke prayers and litanies to bless his weapons, while Narkariel applied purity seals to their armor. Dardariel spun the mechanism of his assault cannon to check the smoothness of its motion before spreading unguent along the barrel. Barashiel was stock still, staring at the blank wall of the craft to sharpen his battle focus.
That's a chance I'm prepared to take.
You heard what the astropath said. Untamed. You've studied the ancient texts, pored over the rosters of Caliburn, the same as I have. Tell me you don't think it's him.
I have no doubt who it refers to. But if he is here, then it's likely he sent the message and is lying in wait for us.
3 times Atias the Untamed has escaped from us just as our net was closing. 2 from right under both our noses. Are you prepared to let him escape again?
The memories flared at the back of Balthazar's mind like an itch. His first action after being inducted into the Dark Angel's inner circle was as part of a mission to capture Atias the Untamed, one of the most notorious of the Fallen and rumored to have been by Luther's side during Caliban's destruction. 10,000 years ago, the Imperium had been torn asunder by galactic civil war, formerly loyal Space Marine legions turning on their brothers in defiance of the Emperor. For years, worlds burned as the traitors moved slowly towards Terra before laying siege to the galactic capital. Though the traitors were ultimately defeated, the Emperor was placed in a catatonic state, existing somewhere between life and death, entombed in a golden throne. The Dark Angel's Primarch, the Lion, led half of the Legion to Terra, but arrived too late. With little to do other than chase down the remaining turncoats who were fleeing towards the Eye of Terra, he opted to return to Caliban, which he had left under the stewardship of his most trusted lieutenant, Luther. Years of isolation and the warping influence of the planet itself had changed Luther, and he attacked his Primarch. While the loyal Dark Angels bombarded Caliban from orbit, Luther slayed the Lion in personal combat. Devastated by his actions, Luther's psychic primal scream was heard by the Chaos Gods, who, cheated of one of their agents, racked the cradle of the Dark Angels with violent warp storms. Those traitors who still remained on the planet either perished in its destruction or were flung through time and space. For millennia, the Dark Angels had believed Atias died in the Cataclysm. But less than a century ago, he had resurfaced, and, upon learning his whereabouts, almost the entirety of the Deathwing had been dispatched to capture him. Neither Balthazar or Zadakiel had yet ascended to the First Company at that point, but had learned of the mission's failure during one of the many initiation rites and were eager participants in the next attempt to bring the traitor to heel and secure his repentance. Like the first mission, the second was a failure, but one that cost the lives of a dozen Space Marines, both Balthazar and Zadakiel had called brothers. Relentlessly pursuing Atias from system to system, the Deathwing again cornered the Fallen, only to be denied vengeance at the very last as he and his warband made warp translation, just as 3 Dark Angel strike cruisers and a battle barge were bringing their combined firepower to bear. That was 20 years ago, and in that time Zadakiel had become master of the 5th Company, the fabled guardian of the Inner Sanctum, while Balthazar had reached the rank of sergeant within the Deathwing and was earmarked for masterhood of a company of his own, as and when that time should come. In those 2 decades, no member of the Dark Angels had even heard mention of Atias's name. Balthazar snorted in derision.
I still don't like it.
The Deathwing sergeant turned his attention back to his equipment, activating both his lightning claws in turn and checking their power levels. Satisfied that they were functioning correctly, he addressed the other 4 members of his squad.
Though the treachery and barbarism of Atias the Untamed are familiar to us all, we step now into the unknown. The coordinates etched into the Psyker's back have indeed led us to a dead world. And in the hours since we arrived in system, not a single life sign has been returned by any of the Pride of Caliban sensor arrays. We have to assume that whatever put paid to life on this world is long gone.
All remained silent as their sergeant spoke.
Even so, exercise extreme caution. Though we may well be walking into a trap, let us not do so blindly.
The Deathwing are not only unique within the Dark Angels, but nothing approaching them existed in any other Adeptus Astartes chapter. Entrusted with the deepest and darkest secrets of the Legion that spawned them, the Deathwing exclusively took to the field of battle in Terminator armor, and these dual boons elevated their position. Whereas the first company of other Space Marine chapters were comprised of its greatest warriors, the Deathwing were an elite in the truest sense of the word, and though rank existed among them, frank discourse was encouraged in operational matters. Balthazar's comments were not a barb aimed at the company master, merely a reminder that though a threat may remain unseen, it is still a threat nonetheless. Red lights flared in the troop hold, and the pitch of the engine noise changed to indicate they were approaching the landing zone. Still several meters off the ground, the rear hatch began to open, and harsh sunlight invaded the dark confines of the Thunderhawk. As the craft touched down, Balthazar turned to his squad.
Today we bear the honor of bringing to heel one of those who stain the legacy of our chapter and sully our Primarch's name. We do so with sadness. Sadness that he turned away from the light of our father and of our father's father. But also with hope. Hope that he can be made to see the folly of his treachery and repent like so many others before him.
He made the sign of the Aquila across his chest. Every other occupant of the crew hold returned the salute.
Good hunting!
Not what I was expecting.
Barashiel's words summed up what the other five Dark Angels were thinking. Countless times had Space Marines inserted via Thunderhawk onto previously inhabited worlds now devoid of life signs, and countless times what they'd found there had been the same. Bodies. Everywhere they looked, there should have been corpses, possibly even destruction and other evidence of battle, but instead there was nothing. No blood, no sign of struggle. Just the huge stone edifices of buildings that lined all four sides of the plaza where the Thunderhawk had put down. Statuary and imperial insignia were all about, and the Dark Angels could not turn in any direction without having an Aquila or replica of some imperial saint or another in their line of sight.
Ecclesiarchy world, from the looks of it.
Narcariel stood in front of a statue depicting a sister of the Adepta Sororitas. The likeness was astounding, crafted by a true artisan. But any semblance of realism was lost by the sheer size of the thing.
Or somebody is trying desperately to get the Emperor's attention.
The sense of scale was imposing, and the near 3-meter-tall figures were dwarfed in comparison to the monuments surrounding them. The plaza itself covered an area large enough to parade an entire Imperial Guard regiment and still have room left over for their troop transports and equipment.
Captain Salinas.
The company master activated his vox and established a link to the orbiting strike cruiser.
Yes, Lord.
Have you turned anything up regarding the planet?
Negative, Lord. I've cancelled all downtime and have every available member of the crew looking through the ship's records.
Concentrate their search on Ecclesiarchy worlds. I want to know everything about this planet within the hour.
Acknowledged, Lord.
Zadakiel cuts the link with the pride of Caliban.
What now? If this world is truly dead, I want to know what killed it.
It must have been some kind of chemical or biological attack. Nothing else could have wiped out the population so completely without damaging infrastructure.
The Dark Angels had made their way out of the plaza and were slowly walking 2 abreast down a wide street, weapons training on windows and doorways, lest some attacker invisible to their auto-sensors ambush them.
There'd still be survivors, or at the very least, evidence. Even the servants of the Plague God don't have a toxin powerful enough to remove all traces of its victim. Likewise, the Dark Eldar. The Officio Assassinorum, perhaps. But why assassinate an entire population when you can just as easily bombard it from orbit? It's not like an ecclesiarchy world is strategically important. A few statues and monuments may nourish the spiritual appetite of the Imperium, but they don't win wars.
It was Xenos then. Carried the people off into slavery. Wouldn't be the first time it's happened.
There'd be signs of battle. No population would willingly enter into servitude with the alien. And even if they did, there'd be dissenters and those who managed to avoid being taken. Something much darker has occurred here.
Agreed, Brother Barashiel. And until we have proof of what happened here, can we leave the speculation to prognosticars and runecasters?
The rest of the Deathwing squad laughed. While some other chapters placed their faith in false science and pseudo-magic, the Dark Angels were driven by reason. Reason that fueled vengeance. Obeying their sergeant's order, they followed the company master through the deserted streets in silence. The planet's sun grew lower in the sky, and the shadows cast by the high-fronted buildings and towering memorials lengthened across the wide streets. With the hour almost up, Captain Salinas's voice cut across the General Vox channel.
My lords, we've just identified the world as Stern's Remembrance. You were correct in your assessment that it is an ecclesiarchy world, though we found the record of it in a more recent archive, as it was only settled earlier this century.
Any idea of population? There must have been a census carried out at Foundation.
It's a relatively small world. 2 billion pilgrims formed the initial settlers, including ecclesiarchy and administratum officials and staff.
The six figures stopped short. It took a lot to surprise a space marine, but informing him that 2 billion souls had just vanished without a trace from a world under the protection of the Imperium was a good start.
Have the crew keep looking over the records to see if there's any more information that may be of use to us. And have the sensorium increase the range of their scans. If anything arrives in system, I want to know about it immediately.
Zadakiel broke the link and switched back to the squad channel.
Stay alert. Anything that can wipe out 2 billion.
The company master never finished his sentence as the peal of bells and a harsh, high gothic voice crashed alarmingly across the eerie silence. The Dark Angels pointed their weapons all about, mindful to any potential danger. Storm bolters targeted shadowy doorways and alcoves, while Zadakiel's own combi bolter traced an imaginary line across the top floor windows of the highest buildings. His aim lingered on an object positioned on the corner of a particularly tall building further down the street, and he relaxed his trigger finger and brought the gun down.
Of course, this is an ecclesiarchy world.
The Deathwing, confident they face no immediate peril, also relaxed.
And what of it?
Listen.
The Terminators filtered out the noise of the bells so that only the voice speaking in high gothic was audible.
It's a call to prayer.
The company master's gaze strayed from the Vox array he'd spotted on the top of the building as he surveyed the skyline.
And where do the faithful go to pray?
Balthazar and his squad mimicked Zadakiel and noted the same three structures dominating the horizon.
Cathedra.
You should not have split our number like that. If this is a trap, then far better we face it as one.
The Terminator sergeant walked side by side with the company master, their pace quickened by the urgency of reaching the cathedral.
There must be dozens of cathedra in this city alone, not taking into account the rest of the planet. We cover more ground this way.
Balthazar had no answer. The company master's logic was sound, but he would have felt more comfortable with four of his heavily armed Deathwing brothers at his back. The labyrinthine streets wound seemingly randomly towards their objective, a world of commemoration and worship concerned primarily with ostentation rather than practicality. More than once, the two Dark Angels found themselves turning a corner, only to find that the spire of the cathedral was now behind them, before the streets snaked around once more and put them back on the correct bearing.
Dardariel, Horatio, report. How close are you?
No more than a kilometer in a straight line, but with these streets, hard to tell. We should have reached it by now, but this city must have been designed by a lunatic.
Lunatic with an aversion to straight lines. My report is likewise, Master Zedakiel. Though I'm concerned that we're rapidly losing daylight. The dark is a perfect place from which to spring an ambush.
Acknowledged. Report back in when you reach your objectives.
Zedakiel cut the vox link, but the faint buzzing sound in his ear persisted. He blink-clicked the deactivation rune, but to no effect, so tapped the side of his helm to kill the feed. But the noise wasn't being generated by his armor's vox unit. It was coming from somewhere in the city. Balthazar had stopped in the middle of the street, turning his head to locate the sound and let his armor's superior technology process it.
You hear it too? Where's it coming from?
There. Straight ahead.
The sergeant raised his arm and pointed in the direction of the cathedral. Without instruction, he set off at pace towards the source of the noise, Zedakiel following close behind. The deserted lanes and promenades twisted sharply this way and that, crazing like cracks upon ice, and leading the two dark angels ever nearer to the cathedral. The closer they got, the louder the sound became, until they were able to distinguish the buzzing as insect noise. The streets began to widen and straighten until they opened out into another broad plaza. The cathedral sat majestically at its far end.
What in the name of Caliban is that?
The Deathwing sergeant did not need to be any more specific, as it was obvious what he was referring to. Though the spire remained visible, the enormous baroque structure of the cathedral was occluded by a swirling black cloud, clinging to the building's outline and writhing with an unnatural motion. The buzzing noise emanated from the dark mass.
Flies! It's a cloud of flies!
Decades of service and experience came to the fore. This was a sight he'd seen too many times before on far-flung battlefields. The wrecks of drifting subwarp craft, and worlds given over to the debased worship of dark gods.
And flies in that number usually means one thing.
The Terminator and the company master picked up speed, sensing the mystery of the population's fate was about to be unraveled.
Corpses.
The Terminator's lightning claws shattered the ornate wooden doors of the cathedral to reveal the horror within.
Throne.
The scale of the massacre that had occurred on Stern's remembrance was readily apparent to the Dark Angels. The cathedral, at least four times larger than the plaza they'd landed in, and with a vaulted roof barely visible from ground level, was filled from floor to ceiling with bodies. Just as it had been impossible to look anywhere within that plaza without seeing facsimiles of the Imperium's dead, a similar scene played out within this house of worship, though the dead here were no simulacra, no visages cast in bronze or chiseled stone. The material from which they were wrought was once living flesh, and no artistry had been applied in their unmaking. Their murderers had been indiscriminate, and all strata of the Ecclesiarchy World Society had been put to the butcher's blade. The corpse of a poor pilgrim girl, her face streaked with grime, dress no more than rags, lay at an awkward angle over the cadaver of a priest, his once fine robes now stained with blood and viscera. An old, toothless woman, parts of her torso missing from where she'd been hacked to death and clinging to an icon of the Emperor in hands rendered tight by rigor mortis, was draped like a lover over a serene-looking clerk or bookkeeper. The only evidence that he was in fact dead and not sleeping was the hole through his head from where a bullet had passed through him. Balthazar splashed through a thick pool of blood coating the cathedral floor and approached the charnel mound. His armor's systems filtered out the inevitable reek, and he unceremoniously pulled one of the corpses free. Several others surrounding it also came loose and dropped to the bloody ground, threatening to bring the mountain of mortality down upon him, but it remained stable. He examined the corpse closely.
Look at this.
Zadakiel was nearby, looking the pile of corpses up and down, as if tallying the dead.
What is it? These wounds. They were caused by a bolter shell.
He held out the corpse, the large aperture through its chest, obviously the work of a mass reactive round. Another voice made itself heard over the vox.
Master Zadakiel, we've reached the cathedral. It's like an abattoir in here. Bodies. Thousands of bodies everywhere. Slaughtered like livestock.
We found the same thing here. I imagine we'll find the same in each and every cathedral on this world. All of them turned into tombs of the pious. Be on your guard. Some of the dead here fell to bolter fire. If this wasn't the work of the fallen, then I'd hazard some kind of arch-enemy involvement.
Acknowledged. We'll complete our assessment and rendezvous back at the Thunderhawk. There is nothing we can do for these people now, save avenge them.
Zadakiel was just about to order Dardariel and Mendrian to do the same, when he noticed what had been left for them above the Hill of the Dead. Balthazar sneered.
Warp magic.
The coruscating orb of blue energy hung suspended in midair, several meters above the piled corpses. Though difficult to make out with the naked eye, the Dark Angel's oculobes and enhanced suit optics enabled them to view the incongruous object as if it were right in front of them.
There's something inside it.
The sapphire ball had a dark core, giving it the impression of a vast eye left to stand sentinel over a killer's handiwork.
What is that?
Only one way to find out.
The company master's hand strayed to a finely crafted leather pouch on his belt and popped a brass clasp to open it. He reached inside and produced a shell manufactured from the same brass as the clasp. Unlike a standard bolt, this one was intricately engraved with runes and script, some of which cast a faint glow.
It would seem that somebody is on good terms with the Master of the Forge.
This round was given to me personally by Chaplain Boreas after we fought alongside each other in the liberation of the Kuminar Gap and drove back the archdemon Chargar Kethakon. It is a specially modified seeker round, inscribed with litanies and wards that are anathema to dwellers in the warp. Cast from a metal that can only be found in mines within the shadow of the Imperial Palace on Terra. It has also been blessed by 13 living Imperial saints.
Zadakiel removed the clip from his combi bolter and replaced the topmost shell of the full magazine with the elaborate brass round. He slammed the clip back into place and took aim at the blue globe.
It had always been my intention that it would be used in the slaying of some demonic entity, though I imagine it is just as effective against warp-born sorcery. I never thought I'd fire it in an Imperial cathedral, though considering its provenance, it seems apt.
The company master squeezed the trigger and sent the blessed ammunition inexorably towards its target. It impacted against the glowing sphere in a blinding flash, causing the two space marines to avert their gaze, the sorcerous burst of light being too much for their armor's visors to compensate for. With the magic undone, the orb dissipated and disgorged its contents, sending a black figure crashing down the heap of corpses. Bodies became dislodged as the dark form slid over the dead and it tumbled towards the Dark Angels at the toe of a macabre avalanche comprised of limbs and torsos. As abruptly as it began, the wave of cadavers abated as it finally reached the ground and bucked the dark figure from its crest, sending it sprawling through the lake of blood at the feet of the Dark Angels. The strange newcomer wiped the blood and gore from his black armor
to reveal winged dagger icons on each pauldron, before looking up with his augmetic eyes to find a combi bolter and cyclone missile launcher aimed at his metallic head. The Fallen opened his mouth as if to speak, but instead issued forth a long and satisfied laugh.
Ha! You fools. It's a trap.
Explain yourself, traitor. Why have you done this?
Atias knelt, facing a wall of the cathedral, hands on the back of his head. Zadakiel had performed a thorough search of the Fallen, and, satisfied that he was not armed, commenced preliminary questioning. The real meat of his interrogation would come later, once he was on board the Rock, and the chaplains were able to set to work on him.
You give me too much credit, brother. This wasn't...
His answer was rudely interrupted by the butt of the company master's combi bolter impacting hard against the back of his neck.
Never, ever call me brother. You and your kind lost that privilege long ago.
Though petty emotion had been conditioned out of Zadakiel, as it had all Space Marines, the Dark Angel stood on the cusp of something approaching anger. Though 10,000 years had passed, the wounds of treachery were still raw among his chapter and their successors. They were dubbed the Unforgiven, and the capture and ultimate repentance of the Fallen was their sole route to benediction.
Answer my question. Why did you murder this planet?
I did not do this. I am merely bait in the trap they set for you. A trap that is being sprung even as you waste time questioning me here. Leave this place. Take me with you to your ship and I will answer your questions there. Let us go now, while we still have a chance to escape.
Balthazar circled the prisoner, his cyclone missile launcher's auto-targeting system compensating and keeping the shoulder-mounted weapon constantly aimed at the traitor's head.
You wouldn't be so keen to go with us if you knew what was in store for you.
Oh, your chaplains, you mean? Their constant quest to have us Calibanites repent for the schism.
He turned his head towards Zadakiel to judge his reaction.
Oh, don't look too surprised, Company Master. The current incarnation of the Dark Angels aren't much better at keeping secrets than they were in my day.
Perhaps. But we know how to remain loyal, how to fulfill an oath.
You may be loyal, but that loyalty blinds you, as does your dogged determination to see me and my ilk repent. Twice now I have told you that you are in the jaws of a trap, and twice you have ignored me. Is capturing me so vital that you're prepared to risk your own lives and those of your fellow Dark Angels?
The capture of Atias, the capture of any Fallen, took precedence over everything, though the Company Master had no intention of revealing that to a traitor.
Very well. I'll bite.